At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Welcome to the Great Awakening Show. I am Joanne, Divine Life Yogini, and on this week's show, we have Chaim Shapira. Chaim is an author and a speaker born in Lithuania in 1962 and emigrated to Israel in 1977, where he earned a PhD in mathematical genetics for his dissertation on game theory and another PhD for his research about the mathematical and philosophical approaches to infinity. Chaim is one of Israel's most popular and in-demand speakers and gives lectures on game theory and strategic thinking, essential philosophy, happiness and optimism, friendship and love. He teaches mathematics, psychology, philosophy and literature, and is an accomplished pianist and an avid collector of anything beautiful. Chaim is an author of 9 best-selling books, with his new book, Notes on the Art of Life, published by Watkins Books.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. Game Time is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their Game Time guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the Game Time app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. Game Time.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Chaim, welcome to the Great Awakening Show.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Lovely. So please tell us all about your wonderful book, Notes on the Art of Life, and why it is so relevant today.
I'll start with revealing a secret. I hope no one is listening. So I can tell you a secret. I usually give myself a new book as a birthday present. You know, people bring me presents, but I usually don't like them. So I must have one present I like. And usually it is a new book. And for the special 60th birthday anniversary, I decided to write a special book. I'm a passionate reader. I like to read very much. In constant search, you know, for books, new books and interesting. And sometimes it happens that I cannot find the right book. So when I realize it is missing, I had no other choice but to write it myself.
Brilliant.
What can I do? Yeah, the book is missing, so let's write. And I was looking for a book, you know, something of a mixture of nonfiction and fiction, a blend of Eastern and Western philosophy, combined with insight from literature, psychology, movies, paintings, Netflix serials, music, as well as insight, of course, from my 61 years of living under the sun.
Yes.
And the Notes on the Art of Life is that kind of book. Of course, I write it and then I read it. And the one thing I try to do, I always try to write about complicated matters as simple as possible, but not simpler. It is very important for me, you know, not simpler, as simple as possible, but not simpler. And this book is something like a deeply personal journey through the valley of the big life questions. All the big life questions are somehow discussed in my book. And I must tell, it is not a self-help book. It is not. But nonetheless, I hope it helps. You know, it can be not a self-help book, but it helps. And I hope what it really does is broadening the perspective on almost every aspect of life, or at least every aspect which is important. And another important thing I want to share with you is that you will not find instructions how to solve life problems. No. No instructions how to solve life problems in my book. I think life is too complicated. But I hope the book will delight, you know, as well as enlighten the reader. And I wrote somewhere in my book, I don't remember where, so I just by memory try to tell it. I think that my book and all the good books, and I hope my one is a good one, I will tell you why I hope so, since many, many very clever people from all ages and all cultures are taking part in this book.
Yes? Lovely.
So it must be a book. It is not me writing a book. Maybe there are many, many, many. And I hope that my book can be used like a lighthouse in the stormy ocean of life. Lighthouse that while having no power to quell the waves, you know, life is stormy, what can we do? Can light the way. And I think about the relevance, that book of this kind are always relevant because our life is often stormy.
You know,
everyone, I think, after the age of 7, no? We know that life is stormy. It is not so simple as sometimes we would like maybe to be. And because our life is often stormy, one way or another, a guiding light in the form of a book, in the form of a talk, is always a good idea, in my opinion.
Definitely. That is so important. And, you know, to live life, you know, in a way, I love that. Notes on the Art of Life from all of these wonderful philosophers and all of these fantastic, you know, thinkers throughout, you know, our history. You've collected a lot of them and put it together. And I think that's really important. And as you said, everyone needs that little lighthouse, that little light to shine a little bit of light down so they can see the way forward and thus shine too.
Yes, have a broader perspective. Just now I'm thinking that my book, you know, it is set in ancient China and ancient Japan, in ancient Greece and Roman Empire, in the charming French town of Chenonceau, in small Russian villages of the 19th century, in the beautiful, very beautiful, I hope you were there, Italian city of Siena, you know it.
I know it well. I've been there, and I named my daughter after that town.
Ah, so you know what I'm talking about. It is beautiful. Ah,
yes.
Very. And in Los Angeles and in Tel Aviv. But the most important thing, I think, that the main setting of the book is the great minds of many, many thinkers, Jewish, Arabic, Chinese, Japanese, all things. And that's what I wanted to write. And as I said there, with movies and serials and art and paintings and everything, literature, psychology, philosophy, ancient, modern, postmodern, just everything. And I hope it was a worthy attempt.
Wonderful, 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 wonderful. And it's lovely because you've done all the research, finding all these wonderful people from all walks of life, and you've put it into one place where everyone can go to get these beautiful insights and philosophies. So thank you for writing this book. But
exactly. Yeah. I'm an obsessive reader. You know, I read a lot. I cannot go to sleep without reading. It takes me about 3 or 4 hours of reading to fall asleep.
Wow.
So if I'm reading so much, it is a good idea to share it with other people, no?
Exactly. And please tell us, because we've got all these wonderful questions, what is happiness and the art of wonderment?
Oh, it is a great question. First of all, happiness is very hard to define. Mm. In my previous book, in English, it is happiness and other small things of absolute importance. I wrote that there are no organized trips to happiness. To happiness leads a very narrow path that with room enough for just one person, not more. I believe that we are all very different from each other. So there could never be a single definition of happiness. You know, something that makes me happy can make other people even miserable. For example, yeah. I love classical music. A symphony by Gustav Mahler or Anton Bruckner will make me happy. But there are people, they make jump out of the window listening to this music. They prefer Eminem or ABBA. By the way, I love both of them as well. Okay, so we are very different, and so there could never be, in my opinion at least, a single definition of happiness. Different people have different perceptions of happiness. For example, some people love mathematics. Me, okay? While others cherish a childhood memory of the day their math teacher called in sick. Ah, it was canceled, the mathematic lesson. So nice. We are different people. The American philosopher Robert Nozick, I hope it is the right pronunciation of his name, presented once a very large list of many, many people and told us, try to imagine something that they have in common and how we can tell them how to be happy. I don't remember his list, okay? But we can make up, you know, it is the same thing. For example, King Charles III, okay, Ludwig Wittgenstein, Kim Kardashian, Caitlyn Jenner, Albert Einstein, Muhammad Ali, Elon Musk, Billie Eilish, Sigmund Freud, Usain Bolt, Lady Gaga, Mahatma Gandhi, Indira Gandhi, Leo Tolstoy, Donald Trump, Greta Thunberg, Greta Garbo, Frida Kahlo, I know a poor woman who toils all the day in the field in a remote region of Myanmar. Let's go for Madonna, Maradona, Leonardo DiCaprio, Leonardo da Vinci, Leonardo Fibonacci, my neighbors, life prisoners in all the all over the world. A very long list. Now we must ask ourselves, what can Madonna, Maradona, and King Charles possibly have in common? Okay, try to imagine all of them sitting in the same room. And now we have a motivational speaker, and he wants to tell all of them how to live a good life. It, in my opinion, it is almost impossible. Think of me and Lady Gaga, or the Rabbi Milubavitch and Lady Gaga. It is very, very difficult. Okay, we are difficult people. Now, of course, there are some things that are common to all of us. Okay, it is better to be positive than negative. It is better to be cheerful than to be depressed. But usually the common things are quite trivial. We know that one. We know that it is better to be cheerful than to suffer from a depression. I don't need that advice. Okay? So we have all we need to discover our own path to happiness and pave it as best as we can according to our own design. But all that said, my dear friend, Professor Tal Ben-Shahar, he is an American Israeli teacher, one of the inventors of positive psychology. Maybe you heard about him. He said he is also a prolific writer. He suggested a basic equation for happiness. It is not a recipe. It is not a recipe, since not me, not him, we don't believe in recipes, but it is an equation. What is this equation? It is a very nice one. Happiness equals pleasure plus meaning. Okay? So what is happiness? Yours, mine, everyone's. Pleasure. Pleasure is really, really important. Plus meaning. Now, I'm not going to tell you, Joanne, what is your pleasure? What is the list of small pleasures for you, for me? It may be different. It is better to be different, yes. And I'm not going to tell you what do you think is the meaning of life, which things are meaningful for you and which things are not. But the basic equation, I think it is true. Happiness for each and every one of us is pleasure plus meaning. But it is very interesting when Tal wrote it, meaning was in big letters and bold big letters, since Tal believes, and me as well, that meaning is more important. Mm. Sometimes people do not believe me. They say, no, pleasure is more important. Then I ask them to imagine their last day on this planet, and I ask them what they are going to think in the last minute. I have a good life since I remember me eating at Joel Robichon restaurant, and then having an Indian Ayurveda massage with eight hands, okay? Or they are going to tell themselves that the life was good since the children loved them, very beautiful. They had the love lasting for 40 years or 50 or 60. Meaning is much more important than pleasure, and pleasure is really important. Okay, but meaning is the main thing. Yes,
your life. It's like you know what was the most meaningful part of your life? What did it mean to you? You know that's so important. Fulfillment, meaning, isn't it?
For me, I think it is love.
love.
My wife are together 40 years. It's quite a lot since. I'm 27 years old. I know that I look older, but 40 years. We are 40 years together. Touch wood. Okay. And it is, wow. It is the main thing. And of course, family, my
family.
Children, grandchildren. It is really important for me. Playing piano, I like writing books. It is really important. And pleasure as well. I like traveling, for example. It is a good thing. I am not neglecting at all. Pleasure is a very good, very important thing. I'm just telling that meaning is even more important. And I can give you even my definition of happiness. But it is my only. Okay? I'm not telling no one. It could be your definition. No, things I believe that everyone may think about their happiness in their own ways.
Yes.
I can write what I think, but not more, just to tell you. So I have to concentrate, and it goes like that. By the way, it is influenced by Aristotle, the great Greek philosopher, and it goes like that. If I look back on my life in my final days on earth and realize that with the cards I was given in the genetic lottery, I managed to produce the near best version of myself, I'd be happy. Now I think what this definition tells that I'm going to compare myself to myself. I'm talking about me. I was given, you know, cards in genetic lottery. I have brown eyes, not green. Okay, I was born in Lithuania, not in London. Oh, these things do not depend on me. It just happened, okay? So given the cards from this genetic lottery and the environmental lottery, if I can tell myself that I managed to produce even not the best version, I don't want to be hard on myself, near best version of myself, oh, I'd be happy. It is enough. In Judaism, we have a very nice Hasidic story, which tells, if I can make it in two sentences, that when Chaim will die eventually, it will happen. You know, it is said, but one day I will be gone. So when Chaim will die and go to God, God will not ask me, Chaim, why didn't you act like Moses? No, God is not going to ask me that question. He will ask me, Chaim, why didn't you manage to produce the best version of yourself?
Okay, yes.
Of myself. I don't have to be Moses and
yes.
No one else.
Yeah. That is a beautiful, beautiful producing meaning, producing the best version of yourself. That's why we're here.
Yes. For example, for me, meaning it is be cleverer. If one is clever, he must be kind. I do not believe in people that are really clever and not kind. Be kinder, be cleverer, not to waste your time under the sun on stupid things. Somewhere in the book, I have a very, very long definition of what wisdom is, but I cannot remember it now. So people, we have to read the book, you know, no choice. And about wonderment. I want to say, I remember now that you asked me also about wonderment.
Wonderment.
So regarding wonderment, I'd like to add that in recent years, and I'm talking about 2-3 years, a growing number of scientific studies shows that the ability to experience all wonderment, the same thing, contributes a lot to our well-being. For example, a lot of things, but for example, amazement makes you calmer. It gives you a sense of proportion and humility. You become more curious. Many things interest you. And you understand that we are all the same person. All of us suffer life sometimes. Sometimes all of us have beautiful moments. So you don't think too much of yourself. You become healthier. Even the good for blood pressure. Really a lot of things just stemming from the sense of wonderment. I personally, everything is for me some kind of a miracle.
Yes.
For example, I start the book with something like that around 14 billion years ago, all space and all matter and energy of the universe as we know it today were trapped in a volume that was less than 1 trillionth of the tip of the needle. Okay, it is unbelievable. Just think about the tip of the needle. Now divided by 1 million. You cannot imagine. It is nothing. And that nothing divided again by 1 million. Oh, it is nothing, nothing, nothingness, total nothingness. And in that size, me and you, we were there. All the babies that were born yesterday and all the people who have already left the earth. All the giraffes and elephants and dolphins and blue whales and pyramids of Giza, Sahara Desert, everything. The Milky Way, the Star of Antares, and the many, many huge stars. Okay? Everything was in something that the size was a tip of the needle divided by 1 million and again. So it is just unbelievable. The fact that I exist at all, it is unbelievable. It is a pure miracle.
that is wonderment in itself, that we actually, you know, that we exist in this reality. Yes.
I teach, you know, I'm a mathematician. My main PhD is in mathematics. And one of the subjects I teach is the probability and combinatorics. I will tell you, the probability of you or me being born is virtually zero. Zero, not one divided zero.
Yeah.
I am a miracle. Everyone, you know, under the sun.
That's right.
Miracles. It is it's unbelievable. So we have to understand this, you know, and not to waste our time. But miracle can be smaller things. You know, we don't have to go to the Big Bang and everything. For example, flying. It is just a miracle. I sometimes in the airplane, I hear people saying, the food is not so good. Are you crazy? Food, Louis C.K. have a wonderful YouTube clip. He's telling people are complaining about food. They are sitting in a chair.
Flying through the air.
Flying with a huge speed of, 1,000 kilometers per hour. It is just unbelievable. Sitting in a chair in the sky. Once, you know, the only human race was dreaming about a flying carpet. Flying carpet, it is nothing. It's 10 kilometers per hour, maybe. We are flying. I can see with my smartphone what is going now on in Amsterdam or New York City. Everything is unbelievable. But the new generation, and there are a lot of studies about it, they lost the ability of wonderment.
Yes.
Since everything, you know, it is so simple. Just push a button and you have everything.
Yeah.
So the younger people, many of them don't have the sense of wonderment.
No.
Albert Einstein said once that if you have no sense of wonderment, you are as good as dead.
Yes.
It is true.
Yes.
Everything. Water. Water is an unbelievable thing. I once read a book about water, and the main conclusion was that no way water could be created.
Yeah.
No problem.
Sacred. Water is sacred. Water is sacred.
It's everything.
Mm.
I think I know has a poem called The Miracles. And I'm not going to cite the poem, it is a long one and I don't remember. But the main idea is that what Walt Whitman says, that everything is a miracle. Leaves of grass, it is a miracle. All the cosmos, all the people traveling in Manhattan, ships in the sea, everything is just a
miracle. It is. And this is why, we have to slow ourselves down, you know, go into meditation, so that we find that peace and slow our minds down to appreciate the divine moment where everything happens.
Wow, you know, Jen, I'm so completely agree with you. Agree with you.
Because otherwise you're going a million miles an hour, aren't you? And that leads me on to another question. Please describe the meaning of the enlightened path or the middle way, because I'm a yogini, I'm a yoga teacher, and we talk about the middle path, right? Not being so high, not being so low. That's the yogic middle path.
The concept of the middle path appears in early Buddhist texts. I think this is the original. For example, we can find it in the second paragraph of the Dhammakakappavattana Sutta, which I think it is the first sermon delivered by the Buddha. It was also suggested by Confucius, and it was engraved on the gate of the Temple of Apollo at Delphi. By the way, I was there some months ago, which tells us, do not exaggerate. But in my book, I'm talking about the middle way due to Aristotle. And Aristotle believed that each virtue lies on a scale between two extreme behaviors, which are not so good. And he assembled a connection of 12 virtues. I'll try to remember all of them. Courage, temperance, generosity, magnificence, friendliness, proper ambition, greatness of soul with patience and sincerity. Shame and justice. Maybe I miss some. I don't know. It is an approximate list. And I want to talk a little bit about courage. For me, it is really important since I'm not a very brave person. You know, it is strange. I know I look brave, but I am not. And I would like to talk a little bit about courage. And I would like, first of all, to quote Winston Churchill. You know, you are in London, so Winston Churchill said that courage is rightly esteemed the first of human qualities, because as has been said, it is a quality which guarantees all the others. Okay, without courage, you have no life. One of my favorite writers, Anaïs Nin, she wrote that your life shrinks or expands according to your courage. If you have no courage, no life. And the American writer John Augustus Shedd coined the saying, it is a very popular one, a ship in harbor is safe, but that is not what ships are built for.
Okay? Exactly. So I love that. That is so beautiful. And it's also, it's like life, you know, you life comes to you and moves you, suffering, contrast moves you out of that comfort zone. Because if you don't go through the suffering, if you don't go through the contrast, you would never move. You would never grow. You would never evolve. You would never have courage to do the things and to take that leap of faith. So it's important. That's what life is. You can't stay in your comfort zone, you know, and that's why life will come and make you suffer to move you out of it. Yeah.
Yes, yes, I agree with you completely. But I would even add to this nice saying that the ship is in harbor is safe. Okay, but it will get rusted. Okay, if the ship is always standing in the harbor, it is going. It is not doing well for the ship neither. For example, if I will stay at my home or comfort zone, okay, I will be only in my comfort zone. No life. And it will. It is not such a great idea, and it is even not safe.
Yes.
I agree completely. And now I want to show how Aristotle deals, for example, with courage. He does the same thing to all the other 11 virtues. Courage, according to Aristotle, lies on the scale between cowardice and recklessness. Okay. That one is one extreme is a bad idea, and the other as well. One may very prudently say that it is located closer to recklessness, at least in my opinion. You know, when Aristotle says it lies between, he doesn't say that it lies exactly in the middle. Not that we know what the middle is, okay? Between. In my opinion, it is closer to recklessness. Clearly, a person, you know, who fears his own shadow cannot be considered brave. Is, as you said, someone is not going out of his comfort zone, he is not brave. But on the other hand, someone who ignores any dangers and plunges into, you know, performing reckless actions is also not being courageous. Olympic-style double vault, you know, while bungee jumping without a harness, you know, most people jump bungee with a harness, without a harness and into a crater of an active volcano would not be considered courageous. On the contrary, it is a fine example of recklessness and stupidity, okay?
Yeah.
So what is to be, how can we learn to be courageous? What is courage truly, okay? Before I answer this question, I want to tell that it's really important to point out that only someone who is able to show fear can be considered brave. Okay, if you have no fear, something happened in someone's head, he's not a brave person. He's maybe a strange person, but not a brave. To be brave is to know what to do, how to conquer your fear. And Aristotle stressed that courage is not possible in the absence of fear. He even adds that a brave person may sometimes fear things that not everyone tends to fear. However, they know how to overcome the fear and deal with it, let's say, rationally. Have you seen, by the way, the TV series Game of Thrones?
Yes.
Game of Thrones? So you maybe remember in one of the episodes, there is a brief dialogue I really like, in which Bran asks his father if someone who is afraid could be brave at the same time. Okay, it is important at the same time. He is afraid, and could he be brave? And his father replies that the only time a person can be brave is when he also feels fear. If you don't feel fear, you cannot be brave.
Of course.
I, as a big fan of making lists, I made, as usual, a list of things for which courage is a prerequisite. Okay, for example, you need courage to say I love you. It's
yes.
Frightening, to say to someone, I love you. Or even more frightening, bringing children into the world, believing that life has meaning, expressing an unpopular opinion. I do it a lot, okay? Coping with illness, keeping or illness. Why? It is difficult sometimes. Better not to know all these things, but it may happen, of course. Keeping one's moral fortitude, even when facing tremendous fear, or, on the contrary, a burning desire. Making difficult decisions in a forest of doubt. Publishing a book. You know, publishing a book, it is a very brave action. Since now I'm writing all my thoughts and my feelings and everything. And now I'm attending this book and I don't know, people will make laugh at it maybe.
That's right. Maybe That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And also, you, yeah, but also you was talking about,
you know, I can go forever. So stop.
No. Yeah. Yeah. And you was talking about, love. You was talking about love. What is the difference between lasting and romantic love? Cause I think that that's a really beautiful question. And I'd like, you know.
Okay. So I tell you a little, it is a difference is huge. And I want to start with Romeo and Juliet.
Juliet, yeah.
Why? Many things, you know, surprise me. But one of the most surprising things is, and it is really strange, that in the Western culture, the story of Romeo and Juliet, a couple of naive, confused children, serves as a model for the type of sublime love that is greater than love itself. It is strange. Let's take a good look what happened there. The story begins like this. Romeo is madly in love with, surprise, surprise, not Juliet, Rosaline. Sometimes people are asking me, Chaim, are you serious? Who is Rosaline? We don't know her. Huh? The play begins with Romeo madly in love with Rosaline. Yes, Rosaline. Rosaline, who is that? Many people forget this detail, but at the beginning of the story, Romeo is in love with Rosaline, Juliet, by the way, Juliet's cousins. And hear what Romeo says about her. I know it even by heart. It is, of course, Shakespeare. Now you will listen to Shakespeare with a Russian-scented English. It is a great event, you know me. So, Shakespeare in Russia. The all-seeing sun never saw her match since first the world began. Wow! So he's madly in love with Rosaline. He's, you know, moments before he met Juliet, Rosaline is the one who has captured Romeo's heart, the one he cannot live without. He is willing to sacrifice everything for the love of Rosaline. But Rosaline doesn't want him. He knows that Romeo is a child. He doesn't understand a thing. And a split second before Romeo falls in love with Juliet to the depths of his soul, he actually loves Rosaline to similar depths of the same soul. Okay, but then at the Capuletti ball, he noticed that Juliet is maybe slightly fairer than Rosaline and immediately transfers his full measure of love to her. I will again Shakespeare, but now it is I'm not sure it is the exact version, but it goes like that. Did my heart laugh till now? Okay? for I never saw true beauty till this night. Eh? What happened 5 minutes ago? 5 minutes ago, it was Rosaline, the true beauty and the true love. Now it is Juliet. So what happens, you know, with this kind of love? It is a nice love. It is romantic. In this case, it is really tragic. But it is nice, not more. By the way, Juliet is 14, okay? 14. It is a child. A child is a model of sublime love. We all are building on Romeo. His age, no one knows. But he was a virgin, so I hope it is not 42. Maybe he's 15, he's 15 or 16. I don't know. I must tell you something. It's again a secret, so I hope no one is listening. But when I was 15, 16, 14, I was madly in love with half of the girls in my school. Not in my class, in my school. Yeah, for example, 200 girls, I was madly in love with 100 of them. It is stupidity. It is not really love, okay? And I must add that Juliet and Romeo meet me only twice. Only twice. They don't know each other. Nothing before exchanging vows and promising to marry each other as soon as possible and so on and so on. By the way, Romeo kills Tybalt and then he also slays Paris. Wow! What happened there? And it is our example of love, not for me. Not for me. I think that true love is lasting love. And I want to tell about it a little bit, okay? But before that, I just remember that we must keep in mind that Juliet is Romeo's rebound love, yes? And all modern psychological studies are suspicious, very suspicious of love of this kind. Now, I am an avid Shakespeare fan, okay? I think that maybe Romeo and Juliet is even almost a parody of love at first sight. Because love, true love, love worth dying for, is certainly a love worth more than one look. I know that it's customary, you know, to elevate romantic love to the status of a miracle, but in my opinion, the real miracle is the serene, stable love that follows in its wake. This more mature love, it doesn't exclude romantic love. It is very important. It doesn't exclude romantic love, but it invites it along as a dear companion, a very dear companion. And such tranquil love doesn't need fireworks, no drums. Okay, its melody is devoid of drums and cymbals and fire, everything. As silent as heartbeat, and almost as essential. My parents were together for 60 years, 1878. And my father loved my mother so much that he even managed to hide her dementia. My mother was ill with dementia and no one knew. No one. Wow. It is a long story. So
That's beautiful. And you know, that's beautiful. And you know, that's really true, because I believe you can have karmic love, right? You can have this fleeting love, or this, you know, which is, you know, you're falling in love with what the person looks like, with their ego, with their beauty, but to me, a true connection is a connection of the heart, mind, and soul. So as you grow older, that body fades, but you're still in love with that person because you're in love with their soul. You're in love with what they think and feel, and you're in love with that. You're not in love with just the body and what they look like, you know, the egoic way of loving.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at AbilityChiro.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And what about, I mean, you know, because the art of life, you know, incorporates all different sides to life. So, you know, we've discussed meaning, we discussed the pleasure, discussed romantic. What about the use and misuse of money? This is really because, you know, it's so difficult to educate people and to talk about money, you know, like, but the misuse and use of money, please just tell us about that.
First of all, I want to say that money is really important. You know, I never lie to my readers. So when someone is telling you money is not important, once one of my colleagues said that, so I gave him my bank account. And he asked me, Shapira, I'm Shapira, why do I need your bank account? And I told him, you think that money is not important? For me, it's important. So you can make a transfer, you know, here and then. Money is important. But
because everything costs money, doesn't it? Everything costs money.
Yeah.
You know, our clothes, our haircut, yeah, everything in the world costs money. How can it not be important?
Well, it is important. Even we talked earlier about flying. It is much better to fly, you know, business or first class than to be in economy with 2,000 people on the same chair.
Yeah.
I don't know. Money is important. Everyone telling that it is not, he's lying.
And yes.
I insist on the word lying.
Yes.
But, obviously, we must make a distinction. For some people, money is a need, and once they reach a certain amount of money, I will immediately give an example, they have enough and say, now we can dedicate ourselves to really important things. For example, helping others.
Yes.
If you have, you know, as much money as they ask, or Bill Gates, or Warren Buffett, or whatever, King Charles, I don't know, okay? So enough, okay, now I can do many really important things. But for others, money is a desire. The distinction is between a need and a desire. And if it is a desire, then regardless of how much they have, they
want more,
more.
Nothing will satisfy them.
Nothing. That is the main idea of a desire. You cannot satisfy a desire. For example, love is a desire.
Yes.
You cannot tell, I loved enough with this. No. Love is a desire. You want to love more and more and more. And money, if it is a desire, exactly as you said, they always want more.
Yes.
They are trying. Epicurus, the great Greek philosopher, I love him very much, said that very rich people, they are trying to pour more water in a bucket that is full to the brim.
Yes.
Okay, it is all full. The bucket is full and they are putting more and more and more. What for? If you have, you know, $30 billion or 40 or 200 million, what is the difference?
It's ridiculous. Yes.
Ridiculous. I agree with you completely. And Marcus Tullius Cicero, in his book on duties, explains a very important thing, and I hope many rich persons know that one, or maybe they will read in my book. He explains that extremely wealthy people have been granted a great privilege. Which privilege? The opportunity to do good without harming their capital, and to exercise this faculty in their moral duty. For example,
yes,
if someone has, I know, $600 million, okay?
Yes.
He's giving now for a woman that is ill and needs maybe medicines that she cannot buy or something like this, and he gives even $1 million, $2 million, $10 million, what will happen? Instead of $600 million, he will have $598 million.
But the truth, But the trouble is, some of these globalists, these billionaires, they are service to self. They are not service to others. They just hold. They do not give back to society. They have become so egoistical in their way that they do not give back, which is the misuse of money, isn't it?
Misuse, exactly. This is a misuse, and it is even more than a misuse. It is really stupid. Why? Many scientific researches show that when you are helping
what you give,
it's something that you will be much happier.
Yes, okay?
You will
of course.
Be much happier, and you know, the number in your bank account, $600 million dollars or $500, it's all the same. It will not make you happy, but to help other people,
yes,
it will make you happy.
Exactly. And also, yes, but also, what you give out in life, you shall receive back. You know, Jesus, the magnificent philosopher, told us that what you give, you shall receive. And we, you know, and it's so important to understand that. And helping others is one of the greatest ways of helping yourself. It's fulfillment.
Exactly. Buddha said, I'm trying to remember something like, the only things that you will have forever, and it will be forever yours, is something you gave to someone.
Yes. Okay.
Everything else, as you told, is fleeting.
Yep.
Fleeting. Yes. Nothing. Today, heaven is something. Tomorrow, I will not. And then you die. And then what? But if you give something, for example, I give you a present.
Yes.
This present is mine forever. Okay. So it is nice. And I want to tell a minute about it. Just important for me to dedicate to Charles Francis Finney, an American businessman and philanthropist, that he created the Atlantic Philanthropies, one of the largest private charitable foundations in the world. And his motto is giving while living. Okay?
Yes.
Giving while living.
I love that.
Yes, it is nice, really nice. And over the course of almost 40 years, Finney gave away his fortune anonymously, which is even greater, until a business dispute resulted in his identity being revealed. It is not so important, but he has given more than $8 billion to charity, okay? Now he's, I think, 95 years old or something like this, and his actions greatly influenced both Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, both of whom called Chuck Finney their hero, someone that is having a lot of money, but he understood that the best thing to do with such amount of money, you remember again, it is to pour water into a bucket which is full to the brim.
Yes.
Stupid. And he gave almost all his money, and yeah, it is the right thing, of course.
And it's so true, because I really believe the Western and the Eastern, they're really merging together now. You know, with you know, all of the travel and all the people emigrating to all the different countries and everything, it's wonderful. It's wonderful because there is not just one way, you know, to seek enlightenment, to seek divine fulfillment, to seek God, Goddess, whatever. Then we can, you know, every path is sacred because it all leads to the same place. There is only one creator, you know. So every way is sacred. Yeah. Look, and you can take a little bit of everything and make it work for you. So that's beautiful. Yes, I understand.
What you said now, it reminds me of the piazza in Siena. You know, in the city of Siena, there is a very beautiful piazza.
Yes.
And you can go to this piazza by many ways.
This, yes,
street to piazza, it is Chinese. And also that street, it may be a Jewish, or it may be Arabic, or it may be Buddhist, or any kind.
Yes.
To the same place are many ways, many streets, many paths that go to the exact same place.
Beautiful. I love that so much. That's so beautiful.
Thank you, John. It was such a pleasure to talk to you.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com. That's abilitychiro.com.